The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Again, hope you had a good day today. It's Thursday, and it's Henry Nyman Day. It's also Zika Day. Zika continues to make noise, moving around Florida with some rapidity. The numbers are still, of course, quite small, but it is moving and it is doing things. There are those who suggest that many, if not most, of the Zika infections are coming from folks who have friends in or relatives in Central and South America. A lot of them are of Hispanic origin. They are also coming in from Venezuela now, by the droves, I understand. We'll maybe talk about that later tonight with Patty Doyle. But Henry, a lot of these people are not what you'd call bona fide long-term, multi-generational American citizen families and residents. They're recent arrivals, and they're bringing this in with them. To our great fortune, it does not seem to be, so far at least, easily transmissible and vectored human to human. That's the only saving grace. We've got, obviously, the mosquito vector. That's a problem, and it does seem to be existing now in Florida. I'm not sure how you feel about it, but I do think that open borders and the allowance by this so-called government and administration to let people come in here without much contesting about it has contributed to a substantial degree to the Zika problem. I think it is what it is, and that's the way it looks to me. How do you see it politically? And then we'll jump into the medical aspect of it. Welcome back, Henry, by the way.
Okay, thank you. It is a political story. It's not a scientific story, and it's not even reality-based. Essentially, the United States has 40 million people that come from these countries every year. And these aren't people that are basically illegal aliens or whatever kind of spin this thing put on the political side. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that have brought it back actually are missionaries from the U.S. that go down there and do work in countries like Haiti. There's another series of people that just go down on vacation mm-hmm. and get infected. And then there are people that have that are U.S. citizens that have relatives that are in the country of origin. So they basically came to the U.S. and they go back to see family. And then there's another group that are that are U.S. citizens that live in Puerto Rico. And so basically the idea of the transmission in the mosquitoes is very easily transmitted in the right conditions, where the climate is conducive for the mosquitoes, and particularly where the Aedes aegypti mosquito is present. And that includes the United States. And as far as imports and exports are concerned, 2 days ago, there was a tourist who actually came to the U.S. on business from Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you covered that. I got it. Thank you. I put it up.
She went to Miami and got infected, and then basically brought the virus to Taiwan.
And so international transmission, a long distance,
That was the first international export out of Miami. And what I was going to go through tonight is to really go over the situation in Miami, particularly because it is fairly dire, and it's orders of magnitude worse than the general public realizes.
How would you rate the mainstream media coverage of it so far, Henry? Competent, negligent, what would you say?
Largely lost. They're basically being manipulated. The reports that are coming out of Miami are carefully tailored to mislead, and the media is kind of behaving as the government there would.
They're protecting the tourism, basically. Is that the bottom line, ultimately?
That's exactly right. That they are basically slanting the story multiple ways, and I'll go through that tonight.
Very good.
And explain, how serious the problem is, and how easy it is to see that just through analyzing.
Let me ask you one more quick question, if I might.
The public data. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
How close are we to getting to a point where Zika, and there are many other illnesses and viruses and infections that are infected by virtually many insects species that bite people, not just mosquitoes? Could this spread to other biting insects?
I don't think so, largely because of its history. The history for this type of virus, a flavivirus, really zeroes in on mosquitoes and actually zeroes in on the Aedes aegypti species of mosquitoes. There are literally hundreds of different species of mosquito. And you really need the right combination to make it an effective vector for humans. And just to give you an idea, there's a much more common species, the Culex mosquito, which is far more prevalent than the Aedes aegypti. But the Culex mosquito, even though it can be infected by the Zika virus, has not proven to be a major vector, at least in the United States. Now, it may be switching a little bit in Brazil. And so that type of change is feasible, where another species can get infected by Zika, and if the right conditions present themselves, it could be more significant. But the Culex, actually in the United States, even though the virus is fairly prevalent, is really causes West Nile virus infections in the United States. Uh-huh. And it does that not so much because the Culex is a good vector for transmitting that virus to humans, but it does it because the Culex actually feeds on birds, and the birds get infected with the West Nile virus, and so they're the reservoir. Uh-huh. So most of the virus is in birds, and then Culex mosquitoes feed off the birds, preferably, and get infected with the virus. And then occasionally, they bite humans. And so you do get human cases, but you get human cases that, you know, are orders of magnitude lower than you'd get with Zika. Now Zika, just to give you an example, the projections for Puerto Rico is that by the end of this year, 25% of the population will be infected by Zika. And so Zika, if the mosquitoes are there and if the conditions are right, you know, it's not exactly analogous to the United States because many of the households in Puerto Rico don't have air conditioning. They don't necessarily have screens. And so the population is exposed more to the mosquito than they might be in the United States. And so that's why I say a lot of this has to do with conditions. So if there's a good human population and the virus is present and starts to infect humans, and then there's a species like the Aedes aegypti that also bites humans, then you basically have the situation set. So you've got humans that are infected, and then you got mosquitoes that get infected by drawing blood from those humans, and then those mosquitoes infect more humans, and you have this transmission chain set up. And that's part of the reason it's taken so long for the virus to come to the United States, because it really got going big time in the in Brazil, and it's you know, the transmission is you have people in Brazil that get infected, and the virus, the mosquito, doesn't travel that far, but it has to infect people that then carry the virus to the next country, if you will. And so and people typically travel to nearby countries. So it was in Brazil for quite some time before it started to go to countries in northern, southern, South America, like Colombia or Venezuela. And then once it got there, then it kind of moved into Central America and into the Caribbean. And once it got into the Caribbean, then it was much more likely to move into the United States. And I've mentioned this before, that over 50% of the cases in New York City actually come from the Dominican Republic.
Right.
So, again, it has to do with people and their normal travel activities, and the virus is just a, a hitchhiker. That essentially, if you've got a bunch of people coming to the United States from the Dominican Republic, and you've got a high percentage of the population in the Dominican Republic infected with the virus, then you end up with the virus in the United States. And Dominican Republic apparently has actually carried the virus to quite a few different states, but the one that's most dramatic is New York, where New York has more travel-related cases than any other state in the United States, and New York City has the bulk of those cases. And the bulk of the U.S., the New York City cases come from the Dominican Republic. So if you're going to pick a country, you know, that would be a country, at least for New York City.
Right.
But,
okay.
But the problem is that the number of cases by travelers is a relatively small number compared to the number of cases that can arise out of the virus becoming endemic in the local population.
Yeah, in the local mosquito population specifically. Let's go to Miami, though, exactly. Henry. You've got a lot of stuff there, so go ahead.
Yeah, well, that is really, you know, where the activity was, is, and will be. And so that is the critical location. And I thought I would go through what happened in Miami just to give an idea both of how serious the situation is down there as well as how the serious situation is being controlled through the press releases, which is basically, you know, probably indirectly recruiting the media to paint the picture, which is not exactly correlating with the reality of the situation down there. And just to give a quick reminder that the big concern is not so much how many travelers bring the virus here, because most of the time the travelers are infected with the virus and they don't get bit by mosquitoes that then get infected, that then infect other people. That can happen, but that's not, you know, a common occurrence. Now, the CDC just updated their numbers, and like I said before, they lag a little bit what the actual numbers are. But the CDC numbers today was over 2,200 cases of travel-related. So there's over 2,200 cases in the United States, and the number one state is New York, and number two is Florida. New York is about 675 cases, and Florida is about 575 cases now. So those two states account for about half of the cases in the United States that come via travel. But what happened in Florida, I guess it's about a month ago now, is they reported the first case that was reported anyway, that was due to a local transmission. And that's what the big concern is. That the big concern, you know, it is a concern that travelers are bringing the virus here, but the big concern is that eventually that is going to result in local infection in the mosquitoes that's then going to kind of get the chain of events rolling. And the first indication of that was about a month ago when a woman in Miami-Dade County was tested positive for the virus and didn't have a travel history. Now, getting that woman tested in itself was quite a feat. I mean, the CDC guidelines are really a catch-22 that essentially it says that to be tested, you really have to be in a location where the Zika virus is transmitting. And in the United States, a month ago, that did not include people that did not travel. So if you've got symptoms of Zika, the first question that's asked is, do you have a travel history? Have you traveled right out of the United States? Right. And if so, was it to a country where there is active transmission? And if the answer is no, then you're not offered the test, and the guidelines say that you're not even supposed to be testing those people. And so it's a catch-22 because you can't really get a case of local transmission unless you test that person, but you can't test somebody who hasn't traveled because they haven't been to an area with local transmission.
That's not so that. Well, why do they do that, Henry? It's not hard to test. Come on, it's not an overly expensive process.
Well, it's part of the game that all of these countries play. That essentially they stack the deck so there has to be serious transmission happening right before they'll admit that there's local transmission.
Right.
And then in the United States, it kind of came up when local transmission was identified in Miami, it was, well, are you going to issue a travel warning? And the CDC said, you know, if there's local transmission, they will issue the travel warning. And when they did issue that warning, they ended up not issuing it for the United States and not issuing it for the state of Florida and not issuing it for the Miami-Dade County, but they ended up issuing it for a 1 square mile area just north of downtown in Miami. Okay. And the explanation was that in other countries where they do issue the warning for the other country, but for the entire country, is because there's active transmission. And without active transmission, they're not going to issue the warning. And so far, you know, at the time they issued it for Wynwood, which is the area in Miami, the active transmission was limited to Wynwood. But to give you an idea of why it was limited to Wynwood, it again comes down to testing. And what happened was this first person that was positive, turned out she was pregnant. And that is the reason she did end up getting tested, even though she did not have a travel history. So this was a pregnant woman that's at risk, you know, if she's actually infected with Zika, then there's concern that it is going to affect the fetus, and that, you know, the mother actually needs to know what the status is so that they know how closely to monitor the fetus, and they can generally start to get an indication if there's a microcephaly problem by looking at sonograms and potentially MRIs. And they're not going to do that on a regular basis where they kind of do a sonogram every week and do sequential sonograms to see what kind of changes there are, unless there's a reason for that. And the reason, of course, if a woman is Zika confirmed, then there would be a reason to do that monitoring. And by the same token, as if the baby is infected, and they see that on the sonograms, you know, the mother would have an option uh-huh. for terminating the pregnancy,
right.
And they have to look closely because the first signs start to appear around 20 weeks, and many states use 20 weeks as the cutoff. That if the baby is more than 20 weeks, they don't allow for terminations. And so it's critical to know whether the mother is infected, and then that information is used for how closely the baby should be monitored. So this woman was positive, and there was a delay of about 4 days before it was announced. It finally was announced that she was positive, and she didn't have any indication that she had traveled outside of the country, but they wouldn't declare her a local case until they investigated her further. So they wanted to make sure that she didn't have any sexual contact with somebody that might have been infected, and therefore she didn't travel, but she got infected by having unprotected sex, for instance, with somebody who actually had been infected, since it can be in the semen for 30 or 60 days, that it didn't even have to be a recent infection. So that they had to do an investigation, and then they wanted to look at contacts. And of course, if they did find contacts that were infected, and there wasn't a sexual component, then that would indicate that A, this was local transmission, and B, it wasn't limited to this index case.
Uh-huh.
And so they announced that, you know, that she was positive, and they were doing additional tests to confirm that it really was a local case. And then a day later, they made another announcement of another case, and that one was actually in Broward County. And these two cases were apparently 14 miles apart. They really didn't have any relationship with each other, but they both were, the second one wasn't a woman, it was a man, but neither of them had history of being outside of the country, and therefore they did an investigation on both of them for contacts, and then they went to neighbors. They collected urine samples from the neighbors to test if any of them were positive. Mm-hmm. And they did a fairly thorough job. They ended up looking, I think, at 54 samples from one and 70 samples from the other of contacts or neighbors, and they were all negative. And so in the minds of the officials, they were cases that were A, local, that they couldn't find. Neither one of them had traveled, and they couldn't find any evidence that either of them had been infected through a partner. And but since they couldn't identify any contacts, they kind of said, well, they were local, but they had no idea where these people were infected other than it was, somewhere in Florida. And they couldn't really say whether this was a dead end where they got infected, but other mosquitoes in the area wherever they did get infected didn't really cause additional cases, and therefore it was kind of one of these dead enders where there was a mosquito that had the virus. They infected this one person, and for all they know, it kind of ended there. After those two cases, a few days later, there was another announcement, and the other announcement was that there were two more local cases, and these two cases were a little bit different, because these two cases, one was in Miami-Dade, the other was in Broward, which is the adjacent county. But what made these two cases different was that they worked at locations that were like a block apart. So then they had an epidemiological link. They had two people that were infected locally. They had no travel history, but they happened to both work in this Wynwood area of Miami, which is a little bit north of downtown. And that kind of set off alarm bells because there have only been a grand total of four known local cases, and two out of the four were working in the same location, 5 days a week type of a thing. So that led to the same type of investigation they had done for the first two. And when they did that investigation, the situation was markedly different. Number one, information that came out a little bit after the fact, it didn't come out at the time. I'll go through the information that came out at the time, but right after they announced these two was on a Friday, the end of July, and then the following Monday, August 1st, there was another announcement, and that announcement indicated that 10 contacts of these two individuals were positive. Six of those contacts were people in the neighborhood. And so they did the same type of thing. These people actually did not have symptoms. Uh-huh. They were asymptomatic. They collected urine samples. And they did a PCR. Now, a PCR on the urine sample reliably gives data for the 2 weeks prior to collection. And they ended up testing 52 people in the neighborhood, and six of them were positive. Now, six positives out of 52 is a very high frequency. And the fact that it was done with a urine test indicates that it was probably significantly higher than 6 out of 52, because the urine test is only going to identify people that were infected in the 2 weeks prior. And they knew at the time that some of the co-workers of the people infected had developed symptoms in June. So if a neighbor was infected in June, if they were sampled at the end of July or beginning of August, their urine would be negative because the virus doesn't stay in the serum or urine that long. And so the only way they could really do a thorough test would actually do a serum test and look for antibodies. The person was affected in June. They would develop antibodies. If they drew blood and tested for Zika antibodies, they could determine that indeed that person was Zika positive. But the testing they did was just the urine, so it kind of gave a lower limit that at least 6 out of the 52 were infected, and it's possible that the number infected were quite a bit higher. In fact, they gave one example. One of the 6 positives, his wife and his daughter were both tested, and they were both negative. You know, all 3 lived in the same household. They had been exposed to the same mosquitoes. Right. And it's likely, you know, there's a reasonable chance that the other 2 in the family were also infected, but either at an earlier date or later.
So what you're saying is we're getting, one way or the other, we're getting false negatives for a variety of reasons, timing, lot of things. So this is really difficult to track. Okay.
Well, the other piece of data that came out after the fact was that of the employees of the first company, the index company, that when they interviewed those employees, and there were about 30 people that worked at that facility, they found out that 14 of the 30 had symptoms.
Wow.
And when you get 14 out of 30 with symptoms of a disease in which generally only 20% of the population has symptoms, that means that in all likelihood, almost all 30 of the people at that facility had been infected.
At one time
and
or
so
another. Right.
When I heard that, it was kind of like, well, they didn't say who that company was. But there were a couple things, there were about 3 different pieces of data that were in this report that the Wall Street Journal got a hold of and actually published a report based upon reading this report. And I'm assuming this report was actually compiled by the Department of Health in Florida. They didn't really say who generated the report, but the information in the report not only indicated that 14 out of 30 employees were symptomatic, but the 2 pieces of data was that most of the cases were male, and the second piece of information was that the company did not have a lot of contact with the general public and did have employees that did travel back and forth to Brazil. And so that was a concern because, you know, as you and most of your listeners know, that, you know, the virus really started to take off in Brazil and was, you know, transmitting fairly effectively as early as the spring of 2015. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, long before June of 2016, there have been, you know, opportunities for people in Brazil to come to Florida and go to their place of employment and constantly expose the local mosquito population to new humans bringing in the Zika virus and giving it, you know, several bites at the apple to kind of get that mosquito population infected in the area right around that location.
Now, okay, hold on. New York, you're talking New York here. We're talking the...
No, we're talking Miami.
I mean, can we jump up to New York, though? I'm sorry, go back. You mentioned that there was a reservoir of infected people in New York, mostly from Dominican Republic or whatever. Does that suggest that it is in the mosquito population, or does it suggest that these people are just going back home to New York from visiting the Dominican Republic or some other location where there is infectivity?
Yeah, all of the cases in New York and all of the cases anywhere in the United States other than Miami, I take it back, other than southern Florida,
mm-hmm.
because they were Broward, all of those cases are travel related.
Okay.
I mean, very good. A small subset are due to sexual contact, but they're sexual contact with a traveler. So prior to a month ago, there were zero cases in the United States that were documented as being due to a local mosquito.
Right.
So that's why Florida was so different. So even though Florida now has about 575 cases, of which 540 of them are travel-related, and New York has 675, of which all 675 are travel-related, and the U.S. has over 2,000, of which all of the U.S. cases are travel-related. So all of those other cases, other than the ones in Florida, at least officially, based upon, you know, limited testing, because a lot of people that, you know, didn't travel, didn't get tested, but the positives were all travelers, okay? And so the first case, that pregnant woman, that was the first case, and it was only a month ago, in the United States where the person did not have a travel history and had no record of transmission locally due to having sexual contact with somebody that was infected, that had been infected via travel. So prior to a month ago, there were zero cases of zero documented slash reported cases of somebody that was Zika positive who had not traveled outside of the U.S. and had not had a sexual contact. And so there were zero cases that had been identified that were due to mosquitoes. So far, all of the mosquito cases have been in southern Florida. And that's why these outbreaks in Miami, or southern Florida anyway, were so significant. And the first two were somewhat discounted because they couldn't find any cluster, whereas the next two, number four and number five, were highly significant because those two cases worked, you know, within, you know, 100 feet of each other. And then contacts in that neighborhood, these cases that were positive, that were asymptomatic, the residents, they lived a block away from these two facilities. And then the 14 out of the 30 were the people that worked at one of the facilities. And so that high rate suggested that the virus was indeed in the mosquitoes and that it was concentrated in that area. And because of the high rate of that first company, I ended up looking along with another person who also was interested, who started looking at the map of Wynwood in the general area. And it was known that there was a 1 mile perimeter, so 1 square mile area that was the area of transmission. And the CDC presser, they were asked, well, where exactly are these two facilities? And they said, well, I can't give the exact location, but they are in the center of the, you know, one square mile rectangle. So we started looking in the center of that rectangle and found this pipe and plumbing supply company called Lehman Pipe and Plumbing Supply. And they were located right in the middle.
You should just rename it to Zika Pipe and Plumbing Supply.
Yeah. So they had a website, and we went to the website, and they said that, you know, their local business, they've been around since like 1940-something, and, you know, a while ago, like a decade ago, or I guess it was the mid-80s, they decided to expand. They became kind of like the number one pipe distribution company in southern Florida. But then they expanded to Central America, the Caribbean, and South America, including Brazil. And so when I kind of read the description of this pipe company, it really kind of matched what was known about this initial index company. They said they had 40 employees. These guys said that they had about 47 employees, but not necessarily all 47 of them were at this one facility. We used Google Maps to get street views, and we had pictures that were done at the end of 2015, and they showed, you know, these pipes that were stacked up in the yard adjacent to the large building, as well as the next block. So they had, you know, literally thousands of pipes. And then one of the pictures actually showed that they had these stacks of cement buckets, which are these, I don't know, 25-gallon buckets,
yeah,
that were just stacked one on top of the other. And these were all in kind of an open-air storage facility that just had a cyclone fence around it. So it was an ideal, you know, situation where, you know, rain would fall into these buckets, and I'm sure that there are a lot of buckets. They didn't go and dump out all of the buckets each day. They basically were nice breeding grounds
for
mosquitoes.
Little mosquito incubators, of course.
Most of the employees would be male. Yeah. And they were a block from where the residents were. So they had the right location, the right description. That was the likely, you know, one of the two companies that was infected. But then, to get an idea of the scale, there was a restaurant. There was it was a group of restaurants. It was land that was kind of leased out to basically food trucks that would come in there, and they would serve whatever was on their menu, and they had canopies, and they were popular for outdoor eating. And they were a block and a half from the pipe company. And the media report said that, you know, they were concerned, and they were actually going to close up shop for about a week or so. And then the reports, you know, they interviewed the owner of the space, who had one of the food trucks and basically leased out the land to several others. And she said, well, turns out that one of their employees did test positive for Zika. And then it also turned out that they had other employees that had symptoms. And a couple of those employees had symptoms that were so severe they were actually hospitalized.
Right.
And then it subsequently came out that at least three of their employees were Zika positive, and they were a block and a half from the pipe company. And that report, once again, kind of indicated that, A, the virus was in the local mosquito population, and B, it was generally fairly efficient at infecting these people that were in the general area, especially people that worked in the area and were working outside. I mean, the pipe company, you know, would be moving these pipes around and loading them onto trucks. You know,
uh-huh,
they'd be driving forklifts all the time, and the people that were at these food trucks, you know, people were dining outside. If they were waiting on tables, they'd be clearing tables outside, and the trucks, you know, were open to the outside. So, I mean, their feature was outdoor dining. And so they would have a regular exposure, and it showed that the mosquitoes were relatively efficient at doing this. Now, the point of going into the detail about these three locations, I mean, the other one only had 11 employees, and two out of the 11 were confirmed. One was an employee, and one was actually a customer. And so, you know, that was still a fairly high number, two out of 11. And again, it depends on how aggressively the testing was. If they were just doing PCR initially, they wouldn't have gotten, they would have missed people that had been infected earlier. And, you know, it was voluntary. So, you know, whether they got samples from all 11, you know, isn't clear. And same thing for the 30, for the other facility that, you know, if they got samples, the numbers for the one, I think, would have been close to 100%. For the one that had 2 out of 11, it might have been higher if they got samples from all 11 and did the antibody test. But in any event, all of these samplings, both of the residents as well as these three different facilities, indicated that the virus was actually pretty efficient at affecting these people. And then, since that was the case, you know, it seemed that the infections would not be limited to these people. That, you know, if the people that served the food at the restaurant that featured outdoor dining were getting infected, well, then probably people that were dining there were also getting infected. And it was Wynwood is a popular tourist spot. There's a lot of artsy types of exhibits as well as restaurants, and and so there would be a lot of tourists that would come there, and they would have similar types of exposures. And so there was a concern that the number of cases associated with this local Zika population would be considerably higher than the initial ones that were reported at these three sites, and could very well involve people that visited and you know, didn't realize that they had been to a place that, that Zika transmission.
Just to let you know, we got about 4 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay, so very quickly, after these local cases, Florida started reporting more local cases, and these were individuals that had no travel history and were positive. And they went and said that they were going to do investigations similar to the to what they did for the first four. And then they started publishing the data and said, you know, case, you know, the fifth case of local transmission, they had collected X number of samples, they had tested X number, and in each of these cases, they had zero positive. But they started publishing that data, and it became clear that they really were not testing many. The some of these, they hadn't tested any. Some of these, they had only tested two or three. Some of these, they had collected five or six samples, but only tested one of them. And they gave the update day after day, and the numbers were unchanged. So it was clear that their investigations were not very serious, other than putting it up on the website that they had collected X number of samples, where X was a very low number. And they had tested X number, which was an extremely low number, or zero. And as long as they didn't get a cluster, as long as they didn't get two cases, they chalked them up as no active transmission. So they went and they would announce these cases, and they would say that the only area of local transmission was in Wynwood, this 1 square mile area. And the media kind of interpreted that, thinking that all of these cases were linked to Wynwood, and that was the only case that there was any real transmission going. And the reality is that Wynwood was the only documented case area, because that was the only place where there actually was significant testing. And these other locations, other than the first two, there was virtually no testing. And so they weren't getting clusters because they weren't testing for clusters. And then the news broke today, well, right before today, there was a case in El Paso, Texas. And the case in El Paso, Texas was the first case for that county. And they went and they asked about the travel history, and that person had been in Miami, developed symptoms the day he returned to Texas.
So he was infected in Miami again.
And they implied that he was actually even infected in Wynwood. And then 2 days later, a case in Taiwan was positive, and she did the same thing. She went to Miami on a business trip. And
well, I'm canceling my trip. That did it. I'm done.
She was positive. And so Miami was exporting cases to Texas as well as to Taiwan.
Right.
Texas was the first case in the U.S. where it was interstate export, and Taiwan was the first case where it was international. So it was pretty clear that there was a problem in Miami, and it wasn't quite clear that it was limited to Wynwood, but it definitely was Miami, and the people just coming in and staying for a few days were getting infected and pulling the virus out of the area. And these two cases are probably just the tip of the iceberg. But the story that got the most attention was the Miami Herald came up with a story this morning that indicated that there was now a second area of local transmission where two or more people in the same area were positive. These were also non-travelers and local transmission, and they constitute a cluster. And the area that they reported was, in fact, Miami Beach. Now, Miami Beach is where the vast majority of the hotels in Miami are located, and is a very, you know, heavily populated tourist mecca. And it's essentially where most of the tourism in Miami, that's where they stay.
Right.
And so the Miami Herald said that by the end of the day, there would be an announcement, and they would provide a map that would show exactly where in Miami Beach these cases were, and there would be a map similar to Wynwood. Well, the end of the day came and went, and the map was not produced. Instead, the governor issued a statement saying that there were now 10 different regions or 9 different regions that had local transmission that were under investigation. There was one in Wynwood, one in Palm Beach County, and the other 7 were all in Miami-Dade County outside of Wynwood. And the data that corroborated the Miami Herald story was that in these 7 areas, you know, excluding Palm Beach and excluding Wynwood, there were 9 cases.
Hmm.
So it's not that hard to do the math that if you got to get 9 people into 7 areas, you've got more than one person in at least one of the areas. And 2 people in the same area constitute a cluster, which constitutes active transmission.
Right.
So their press release indirectly confirmed the Miami Herald that there was another area of active transmission.
Right.
And these are all being done with passive surveillance. They're not finding these clusters because they're actively investigating the locals' cases. They're getting other people that are going to doctors and showing up, and they're saying, well, where is this person, you know, likely to have been infected? And one of these 2 people in Miami was a tourist on Miami Beach, and the other one was a local employee, you know, and maybe was a lifeguard, you know, on the beach. They didn't give the details. But anyway, that's the latest information that now there's a second location in Miami. And with that information, a lot more people are going to be tested.
Okay.
And these local cases are going to explode.
All right. Very good, Henry. Well done, indeed. The world is up to speed, and we're up to date. And thank you. And we'll keep posting it as we get it from you.
Okay, very good.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Night. Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD. And we'll be right back. I'm going over to England, to Brighton, to talk to Terrible Tim about the truly outrageous situation with the Muslim, they call them refugees, but this is an invading army. They have rape gangs now all over England looking for young white girls to kidnap and horribly abuse. They're destroying their lives. And these so-called human beings are not being dealt with appropriately. Back in just a minute with Terrible Tim. Hang on.